Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Tabac Business Sale podcast with Sam and Damien. We're seasoned pros now. We've just filmed our first episode, so it's, you know, water off a duck's back for us. We're experts.
Okay.
Today's episode is around the art of selling a business. So sort of a step-by-step guide. And the first bit that we want to talk about is, you know, what are some indicators that you need to sell your business? Why may it be the right time for you to look at exiting? Damien, you've probably got a couple of thoughts on that, I'm sure.
I've got a couple of thoughts on most things, Sam. You know me.
No, you do, yeah.
look, the first thing and the most obvious one is if you own your own business and you're bored. Because boredom can lead to not a bit of disinterest. And at the end of the day, your clients can pick up disinterest in a heartbeat. So if you're kind of bored with what you're doing, if you're jumping out of bed in the morning and it doesn't spin your wheels anymore, that's a really good sign that you really probably shouldn't be there, and either sell it or find a general manager who isn't bored and can run it for you and make some good money for you. Boredom is probably the most obvious one, and one of the signs of being bored with your core business is suddenly you go off on tangents and you invest in different projects and different processes and different sectors or different products that may or may not have anything to do with your core business.
Trying to reignite the fire.
That's exactly right. So we would warn people, if they're going to go off on a different tangent, is it for the right reasons? Is it for a really good fit? Is it a great opportunity to bolt on? Or is it because they're sick of the old toy and they want a new toy? Because that's the wrong reason to do it. And other indications, well, I mean, look, at the end of the day, that business is cyclical. Economies are cyclical. Some businesses are counter. You know, we're getting a lot more liquidations now. Mm, you know, times are tough, but the liquidation accountants are really happy. you know, and that's clearly a counter-cyclical business. But if your business has been suffering declining results or losing market share, and you know that you can't blame the economy, I think that's another sign that, hey, has the market moved beyond my level of competence? I talked in the first episode of the baby boomers perhaps being suboptimal digitally, and you know, there are certainly some areas where if you don't really get the whole point of a website, for goodness sake, or marketing digitally, or using the tools and the technology, whether it's AI, whether it's whatever, and the business actually needs that stuff. Mm. I mean, I had a business that I sold to some people many, many years ago, and they've run it really, really well. But part of the business, it's quite strongly software orientated. And the whole AI thing in the last, 12 months has been such a revelation. AI is used in the software that they use for the business. But the risk is that AI may become so part of the furniture for anyone that their core market may just disappear. Mm. Now, we don't know. They don't know. They're working their way through this. But that could well be a sign that, you know what, we've either got to reinvent the wheel here or just screw the scrum somehow to get back the business that we used to have, or to reinvent the business that we used to have. So all of those things can happen.
And on the inverse of that, if you're selling a business on a decline because you're losing market share, it can be hard to sell. If you've got a business that's absolutely cranking and it's gaining market share and it's growing year on year, well, great time to sell. If you are thinking of exiting in a few years, why wait? Because people love to see a bit of, we love a good growth graph on our IMs, don't we?
We certainly do. And look, you've nailed down the last point I had down there. When the business is performing optimally.
Yep, it's a fantastic time.
If you think that you might be happy to go. I've had a couple of occasions where a business owner has come to me and said, look, I'm not ready to sell. I'm not even close, but I just want to understand the process. And so we go through the process and we give them an indication of where their value sits. And they're like, oh, okay, crikey, that's all right.
Yeah.
I can just about guarantee if we have that conversation, within 12 months, that owner's coming back saying, you know what, if you find a buyer, let's
exactly.
go. Because they've just started the thinking processes. The business is running well, and as you say, Sam, if it's going well, it's far better to sell it then when it's not going well. Exactly. Because at the end of the day, in terms of, you know, one of the things we have to do in terms of the technical aspects of well, how profitable is it? You know, if it's had 5 years of decline, you're not going to take a five-year average. No. You're going to take the last 12 months, and then you're going to look at this 12 months and go, well, how are we doing? Month, exactly. That's right. Conversely, if you've been going upwards all the time, the buyer might want to take the five-year average, yeah, but again, the reality is you're taking the last year or year and a half, or perhaps last year and this year.
It's about what it's going to make next year.
That's right.
Thing, isn't it?
Yeah. So, performing optimally, if you're happy to exit, that's a really good thing and a good time to be thinking of going.
And look, retirement's obviously a key aspect of people wanting to exit. If you're retiring, you need to sell your business. It's pretty simple. Don't leave it too long. And look, we're saying this to mainly accountants who have got those clients. We have seen vendors and business owners that were going to sell their business in sort of 2006, 2007, and then the GFC hit. Obviously very hard to sell because everybody was struggling. They then got the business back up and running, and then this is Christchurch, the earthquakes hit. So they couldn't sell it again. And then things actually cranked because we had the rebuild, so they held on to it. Probably should have sold it in 2016, 2017. But then we had the pandemics. And so I do wonder, like, now is potentially interest rates are dropping, the market's looking pretty good, we've got lots of buyers out there. We've got a 70-year-old business owner, why wouldn't they be looking in the next 12 months to exit? And I do wonder, like, are they waiting for the next event? Because events keep happening. We could have a golden opportunity in 12 months. I would say that as a broker, of course, but at the same time, what are they waiting for? You know, World War III? Yeah,
that's right.
That's what I always joke with them. But potentially, get out while the sun's shining.
Which I guess leads us, Sam, to those people that are perhaps going to take your advice and say, well, okay, let's rock and roll.
This,
so
yeah.
what are the key steps in preparing the business for sale and starting that process off?
Yep. And so look, there's sort of tangible things and there's intangible things. And you've got a few points to make, I guess, on the tangible things. But there's a key aspect, and this is what people always want to know straight away, is that if it's a business with a working owner, what does that working owner do and how reliant on the business to the working owner are they? So if there's a working owner and he looks at me and says, I only work 30 hours a week, I can tell by looking them in the eye that they actually work 60 or 70 hours a week and everything has to come through them. And without them in the business, there is no business. And I say, have you ever taken a few weeks off to Fiji with your family? How'd that go? Oh, no, I couldn't do that. Well, that's a huge red flag. Whereas if we have a business where, yeah, I just took the whānau off for a month and we had a great time, came back and nothing changed, the business kept cranking along, the staff were happy, that's music to our ears and also to buyers and their advisors. So the key is sort of intangible is to get rid of that reliance on you. What can you delegate? Could you step away? Could you only do 20 or 30 hours a week and the business run well rather than 50, 60 hours a week? That's sort of, I think, the key thing to work on, and that's the key thing that people want to know. But as well as that, there's quite a few other things to work on.
Sure, and I think that's not to say that, you know, when you're on the beach or you're in the Bure in Fiji and it's cocktail time, you can't log in. Do the pay run because,
yeah,
you know, most owners will do that stuff.
A quick question,
you know,
yeah.
Approve the invoices for payment, answer a quick question about, you know, a certain thing. I buggered off to the UK and Ireland and Canada for 7 weeks and you held the fort for 7 weeks.
No laptop too, didn't you?
No laptop, just a phone.
Mm-hmm.
And you held the fort and look, I was there for my clients if they needed me, but you were there for them more, which is great. So if you've got the ability to delegate and know that your, I guess, the responsibilities you have as an owner are still going to be seen to, that's the key.
Absolutely.
But look, in terms of I guess, the bog standard stuff that we absolutely need to see, we need to see your historical financials, so your annual reports for the most recent 3 or 4 years. We need to see whether you're running MYOB or Xero or Reckon or whatever general cash manager, whatever GL system you've got. We need to understand how the business is performing on a year-to-year basis. Look, if it's a very small business, you know, maybe it's a case of just doing getting your accountant to do a quick P&L for the 6 months or the 5 months of the current year. So we need your financials. We get very frustrated, and I've got one particular possible client who he's always about a year and a half behind. in terms of where's your annual report? Oh, and it's kind of like, well, by the time I get the 23 report, it's not 23 anymore, it's 2024 or nearly 2025. So it becomes very difficult. If you haven't got current information, we haven't got a lot to go with.
And at this point, a business is only as good as it was in the last few months in buyer's eyes. Like, yes, we can look at 5 or 6 years pre, but people are going to want to know, how did it do last month? Just, there's very, a lot more important than how it did in March 2023 financial year. So
it's that immediacy. It's
2024, right. Most people, they should have a cloud-based accounting software where they can just jump in and push a button, at least give us the monthly sales for the last sort of 7-8 months. And it can be seen as a bit of a red flag if you don't, because it means, well, what? How are you controlling your stock then if you're not using systems? Because it's $50,000 every single year, according to the accountant. Well, no, you've got to have accurate reporting.
Well, one of the businesses that we chose not to take on earlier this year was a business where it was like having a pot of stew, and the vegetables were all in there, the meat was in there, the spuds, it was all in there together. And they had personal drawings, they had work being done around their house, they had a whole bunch of stuff. They had their staff doing stuff in the wool shed that was totally unrelated to the business. And it was like, and they could not accurately define, apart from best guess, what actually was business revenue and expense and what was their personal stuff. So that just won't fly, not in today's market. A couple of other things that we do look at when we're assessing, I guess, a business, and this is all part of our evaluation perspective as well. You know, we look at things like systems, you know, as you say, how reliant is it on the owner? We look at your clients, we look at your suppliers, we look at, you know, is there a key reliance on one or other of those? If there is, it is what it is, that's okay. It's just a factor when we come to put a value and apply an appropriate multiple, or when a deal is structured. If you've only got one client, you are not going to get 100% of what you want for the business on day one and go away. You're just not.
Risk.
There's going to be some level of earnout depending on that client remaining with the business.
The last thing your buyer wants to find out when it comes to crunch time is that, you know, 80% of revenue is to one customer. So we want to know that straight up. We want to incorporate that into our appraisal. We want to front that in the information memorandum, including ways to mitigate the risk from a buyer. Because quite often we do hear grumblings from accountants and they go, oh, look, we only realised once we've gone under due diligence that 80% of work was to one customer. And the poor buyer's already committed a few grand to their lawyers and their accountants. So we'll front that and we'll have plans to mitigate that as well, because it's best that we be straight up and transparent.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, we're wasting everybody's time, including us.
Yeah. And that buyer may be contractors, and that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, it just is what it is. We've got a 12-point plan that we tend to use when we're assessing businesses and value, and within that, there's about 5 sub points in each of those. So, you know, we do take a lot of time to try and get it right. And that helps when we come to write up the information memorandum as well, because that's really the, and we're going to do, it's so important, we're going to do a separate episode on the IM itself, because look, preparing a business and putting it to market, an information memorandum is not just the last 3 years' financials and half a sheet of background. It has got to be so much more than that to be effective. And that's why we're saving an episode for that. But really, yeah, once the IM's up and running and done, then it's really up to the broker to work with you and say, hey, yep, this is our marketing plan. This is what we know we can achieve. We've got some buyers lined up, all of that different stuff. So, once you've got your financials and your information base together and an IM sorted, that's pretty much all the preparation that's required. The key thing, and perhaps you could talk to this, Sam, comes then back to, as a vendor, if you've got a good broker, they should be doing all the heavy lifting, and you shouldn't have to be too distracted, because your only obligation, apart from one that you're going to talk about right now, is to keep the business rocking and rolling.
Yeah.
That's so important. And as brokers, our role is to make sure that you can focus 95%, if not 100%, on just keeping the business going. But what is that one obligation, Sam?
Yeah, look, we pride ourselves on being responsive. What I've always said from the start of doing this 8 years ago is that, you know, I try and look at it from a vendor's point of view. We might have 5 or 6 listings on the go. We don't try and have too many. You know, somebody might sell a house three or four times in their lifetime, but usually a vendor will sell one business, maybe two in their lifetime. So at that point in time, it's actually the most important thing going on, one of the biggest events in their life, really, because it's their whole wealth creation, their retirement plan, for example. So I try and look at it from their point of view, maybe juggling quite a few things, appraisals, IMs, you know, a few negotiations. But if my vendor calls me, I'm going to make sure if I miss it, I'm going to get back to them really, really quickly. That responsiveness is absolutely key because it's the most important thing to them at that time. Well, what I ask of my vendors is that I get that same responsiveness. And I have had a vendor or two who just don't get back to me. So, hey, look, we've just hit the end of September. Can we get an April to September P&L report? Especially this year, it's quite important because a lot of businesses have really struggled. This particular one cranked along. But just got nothing from them. No response, no nothing. I chased them a week later. Oh, it's being worked on. Okay, cool. What about the March 24 accounts, which were going to be ready a few months ago? Oh, I'm not sure. I'll talk to the accountant. And then a week later, I chase them up. And I've got three buyers who are gagging for this information, but I can't provide it to them. And so all we ask is if, you know, we're committing our time, we want them to do the same to us. If they really want to sell and really want to exit, that's all we ask. Because if we have a question, please get back to us. And 99% of our vendors do, because as I said, it's such a key point in their life. They want to get the business sold.
Well, I mentioned in episode one that even though it might surprise some people, buying a business, it is still quite an emotional purchase. And a buyer will get wrapped up in that, and the whole event, and they will want to move forward when they want to move forward. And if we're putting roadblocks and delays in their way, and that sort of ardor cools, then may sound funny, but that can often happen. So yeah, we need to be responsive. We need to have everything ready to go from when we hit the ground, so we can hit the ground running. One of the things that I'd like to just touch on, and it's a key point for a lot of businesses that might be import and wholesale businesses or import direct sales or even manufacturing or engineering businesses, is this issue of stock. With stock where it's raw materials and it's fairly, you know, it's very usable, it won't date so much, that's kind of fine. And you will recall, Sam, through COVID, a lot of importers were bringing in stock, they were upping their stock orders.
Doubled because stock levels of the ones I had today,
Yeah, right. Well, shipping was delayed and factories were behind the eight ball.
You can't sell what you don't have.
You can't sell what you don't have. But the downside of that is now when things are a little more normal, I say a little more, we've got sea routes not working through the, around the Arabian Peninsula and what have you, but we're better than we were. If you've got stock, and particularly if you're reselling that stock, either directly to end users or to resellers or retailers, your buyer is, and more importantly, their accountant, their gimlet-eyed accountant, who perhaps isn't necessarily a kind person, is going to look at that stock and say to the buyer, you're not going to pay dollar for dollar at cost for product that you have to discount to move. So they're going to say, right, give us a rolling stock, you know, what's moved in the last 12 months? And you might have 100 widgets, and you've sold three in the last 12 months. So what are the odds?
Want to pay for that?
Why would they want to pay for that? Look, I know that you and I both, it's one of the things that we constantly address or try to address with our vendors who are in this situation. How's your stock? What are your stock turns like? And what about bad stock? And the standard answer is, I don't have bad stock. Well, I might have a couple of packets or something out the back that are worth $5,000.
What did I have? It was a sort of a motorcycle parts business, and the guy said he had a lot of stock. And he goes, oh, no, nothing's obsolete. There might be a few old stickers that might need to get chucked out. And it turned out, you know, once we're under due diligence, that he had, you know, three something or other 1980 Honda clutches. And I said, well, how many have you sold of those in the last 3 years? Oh, none, but somebody might want one one day. I was like, So he didn't sell those. He actually, we let him keep those and sell them on Trade Me, and he's probably still trying to this day. But that's the questions we've got to ask, knowing that our vendors, it's like what I said before, a vendor will say, I only work 30 hours a week in the business. Same thing with stock. We know if they're telling porcupines. And so we'll keep asking them questions and we'll get that stock report and, you know, and see if it's actually turned over. Because it's really key. Some businesses are predominantly stock. And so that stock number has to be accurate and has to be palatable from the buyer.
That's right. And look, to be fair to the vendors, they may just have put it down as such a low priority in their heads. They just don't think it's an issue.
No.
But actually, when they address it, they can say, crikey, I've got 100 grand that I should have in the bank that's sitting in old stock that I just need to try and realise.
Yeah.
So it's a really, really important point.
And if they do clear it at a discount, it is going to affect their margin in that year. But we can explain that in the information memorandum and go, this is the reason the margin's reduced, because they cleared stock that they knew wasn't actually saleable. And a buyer's going to go, and their accountant, that's the right thing to do. Exactly. So we can either explain it as a one-off.
So these are, and perhaps just touching on that as well, because we're talking about a step-by-step guide. When we determine the profitability from your business, you know, if you're putting very clearly, you know, if you're running a racing, if you're running a couple of racing cars around Ruapuna and that's all going through the business, look, that's a justifiable add back. Yes, you're putting your accounts together for the tax department. If you're going to benefit from that perk, that's well and good. But we look at that and we say, hey, look, that's very provable. You know, that 30 grand that you've spent on sponsorship, you might be sponsoring a golf tournament, for 10 grand. Yeah. That's stuff that you do because you can and it's fun. Or throwing a, if you're a builder and you've actually put 20 grand's worth of materials into a new classroom for the kids' school, you do it because it's the right thing to do. And it is. But your business sale shouldn't suffer and your profitability shouldn't suffer by doing that. So it's not as though, you know, so we can do adjustments, we can do add backs that are fair and reasonable and that can pretty much be clearly shown to be the case. So that's, I think, just a point worth remembering as well. So Sam, as we move through into, I guess, the end of this particular episode, myths and misconceptions about business sales and selling your business.
A big one that we get is just what people get told. It could be someone at the pub, it could be their neighbour, it could be their accountant, that you're going to get 3 times profit for their business. And that just seems to be the gold standard. And then I just say to these business owners, well, 3 times what? Oh, profit. Okay, what do you mean by profit? Oh, it's the number at the bottom of the page. I'm like, yeah, but is that before or after you've been paid your wages? Oh, and that stumps them. An example is if you've got a business that makes $200,000 profit, but $150,000 of that is a market wage for the owner, then that profit is $50,000. And you times that by 3, it's only 150 grand. I think the business is worth a bit more than that. Some businesses, the actual EBITDA after paying a working owner is zero. So times that by whatever you want, the value is zero. So that's I guess, the biggest myth is around that 3 times. It's not about the 3 times. It's about what you're actually multiplying. And most small businesses' valuations are based on income to one full-time working owner. The bigger businesses are based on EBITDA, and that's after a manager salary has been allowed for. So that's a fully managed business, and that's a different kettle of fish than a lot of SMEs in New Zealand, which has that full-time working owner. So that's probably the biggest misconception. And it's, look, I'll be honest, there are even some accountants there that don't quite get it. They just whack a 2 or 3 times multiplier on it. So yeah, you've got to be really careful with exactly what it is that you're multiplying. And I'd say that's the biggest,
And I think that can even extend through to, we read a lot in the, well, I subscribe to Business Desk. It's one of the things that the value we can add just by understanding different markets. And you read about a business that might have sold, and it might be turning over $50 million, and it's sold for, let's call it, 10 times net profit after tax. And so then a business owner, not unreasonably, will look at that and say, well, my multiple should be 10 because that sold for 10 and I'm turning over. Okay, well, maybe mine's 8 because I'm turning over half of what they turned over. Well, actually, net profit after tax is a very different beast than earnings before interest and tax. But you've got your tax that you've got to factor back in. You've got the interest costs you've got to factor back in. And so when you actually equalise and adjust for these things, multiples again, EBIT multiples come back, or EBITDA come back to 3 to 4 times. That's the reality. Owner income comes back to 2 to 3 times. And then there's variations around that. So yeah, it's not just profit.
No, and the key is market data, which we have a lot of, and it's all sort of our internal IP, which is all tobacco sales around the country the last 20 years. where we'll actually compare apples with apples. So similar industry, similar revenue, similar profit, not an acquisition for $10-20 million at a $10 model. It's so different, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
I think the big one for me in terms of a misconception by potential vendors, they don't know where to start. And it seems to be this big, oh, it's going to be such a process, it's all too hard, and it overwhelms them. And it's actually, if you have a good broker, it's not overwhelming at all. A good broker will lead you through that process. We very briefly covered the process in episode one about everything that happens through the sale process. Now, someone who can work with you, who values the business appropriately, who understands the business, because that's really, really important. And we'll touch on it later on when we do the IM podcast. We almost do a little, you know, I remember we did Irrigation 101, one of the first sales we did down in Ashburton many, many years ago. And what we didn't know about pivot irrigators and trail hose systems and K-line, and it wasn't worth knowing, you know. So we really did learn our stuff. And that's just what a broker should be doing, to understand the business. So when they do get asked questions, as we talked earlier, the business owner focuses on keeping the sales going, keeping the profit rolling, and the broker should be doing the hard yards in terms of liaising with clients, not just bringing every potential buyer through the workshop at a time that isn't convenient. So a good broker will make sure that the process is not time consuming. So if that's what's putting you off, we'd love to hear from you. What about others, Sam?
I think that's a nice way to wrap it up, Damien. I think we've done our stash, unless you have anything extra you'd like to add.
I'll probably just one more thing. A lot of business owners will say, oh, well, I want you to get as much as you possibly can. It's like, well, that's fine.
Of course they do.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Yeah. But ultimately, the best sales are where it's actually not a zero-sum game. The best sales are where something, you know, is performing optimally and there's some new opportunities on the horizon, and the new owner, you know, the old expression is leave some salt on the bread. The new owner has got the ability to actually add value to the business they are purchasing. So, you know, if it's all about, as a vendor, if you want to, you know, absolutely take everything you can off the table and to hell with what's going to happen next year, maybe we don't want to hear from you, because that's not the right approach. The right approach is to say, I want a fair price. I want my business to survive, more than survive. I want it to thrive. I want my staff to keep their jobs. I want the new owner to succeed, because they're putting an awful lot of money in the vendor's pocket to buy that business. So, you know, it should be a positive sum game, not zero.
Right. And it should be a two-way street. And I would say that's 90% of our vendors, is that they want to sell to a fantastic guy or a fantastic lady or a team that they know are going to look after the most important thing to them, which is their customers and their staff. So yes, they want to get a good dollar. They want to get some good money for the business. But as we always say, if you're in the supermarket, you're at Fendleton, New World or whatever it is, and you bump into an old customer or an old staff member, you don't want them slagging you off saying, why did you sell it to that person? They've completely destroyed it. They want to go, geez, that was a good move. We're loving life at the moment. Nothing's changed. And Christchurch is a very small place. Well, New Zealand is a very small place. Yeah, you want to do the right thing. It's your legacy. It's something that you've built up over years. And that is really important to most. But we do get the odd one who are like, I just want top dollar. Yep. We go, that's great. Good luck with that.
Yep. And I think just closing on a nice wee anecdote, I did have one sale a number of years ago, and the owner's wife so loved what she did. She still worked part-time for about 10 years for the new owner. And I think that's just a lovely way to sign off. It's a really good, it was a great outcome. And everyone was happy.
Fantastic. Okay, guys, well, that's us for our episode here, but we will see you very soon with some more fantastic information from the Tabac Business Sales Podcast. Got it right, yeah.